If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save. Like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save. Like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Baby, we're back. It's been a while since we've done a podcast.
No, it doesn't work that way. We haven't done a podcast since July 9th. Maury's like, it's not that big of a deal. But it's been a minute. Okay. It's been a minute. I missed this.
We've done some clips. Yeah. I mean, it's summertime, Deuce. You know, you can't just like shove a podcast out every single day like you get to do during the season.
Well, so ball is life.
It is life.
And let's start the show.
Deuce and Mo. Deuce and Mo. Deuce and Mo. They tell you what they know. Deuce and Mo. Deuce and Mo. Deuce and Mo. The podcast that you know.
I've been handed some instructions early on in the podcast that I am obligated, legally, I guess, to mention Morgan's face and her voice.
Thank you.
So, Morgan, if you want to take it from here.
Yeah, playing injured. I would like everyone to know that. I had a Fraxel laser just a few days ago. Now, what this does...
This is actually intentional?
Excuse me. What it does is build collagen and gets rid of fine lines so I can get ready for the next NBA season so I don't have to cake on a shit ton of makeup and look like a clown. Yeah. Second thing, voice has not come back since Las Vegas. I feel like there's been so much dryness. I don't know what's going on. I've been stuck in a home full of air conditioning, which I'm not complaining about having a nice, cool house. But, I miss a little bit of fresh air. Had some nice days the last couple of days. Think I'm getting better. Go.
All right. That was from Morgan Reagan's representatives. We had to get that in. Otherwise, I don't know what would have happened
sued.
To me.
You'd get sued.
Yeah. The face thing is tough, though. I feel for you. Because someone who, like, you know, doesn't have to do this stuff to his face because he's so perfect.
No, it's just,
I don't worry about that.
You know
stuff.
What's so funny is that so many people have even said, like, are you 40? They've asked you that. And you're like, what? I'm a Gen Zer, and you're not.
Yeah.
Like, physically or mentally, you're not.
Agree to disagree. we got a lot to get to on the podcast today. Recording this on a Sunday afternoon.
Why are you doing this on a Sunday afternoon? That's random.
Well, Team USA, the men's side, just played a basketball game. Can I just say?
Was that Jay Leno that just asked that?
Sounded like it. Hearing Round Ball Rock on... You know, I know they played it for college basketball on Fox. I mean, no. Hearing it on NBC,
thank you.
There's just something fitting about it. And I know there's a generation that's like, what? I didn't watch basketball back when it was on NBA on NBC. But for me, that my first basketball memories, NBA on NBC, not only is it coming back to NBC next year, fall 2025, but they've already, you know, with the Olympic basketball.
Yeah.
Going to break. It feels so good to me.
In some ways, like, that's the song I would want to be played at my funeral. You know, like, when my casket's, like, being brought down. Like, there's just something to that song that is so magical. I want to die with that song. I love that song.
But it would have to be a slower version.
No! No. No, you play it how it is. It is amazing. It is beautiful.
Well, are people, when they're carrying your casket...
I mean, I could say I could say oh, walking down the aisle like at the wedding. You know what I mean? Like I could say that. But
sure. Well, I don't know.
I mean, it can be played in all aspects of life. It's I want it to be my anthem.
I just feel like when that music is being played, it brings joy, and you kind of want to dance. So you know those the funeral dancers you've seen with the casket before.
Celebrating
is that,
life.
Is that what you want?
Correct.
At your funeral?
Like, correct. Even though I want to be cremated, so yeah, I don't know. Either way, the whole point is that song is just brings me so much joy. And when I did hear it for the first time, and then basketball actually being attached to it, it was just, I mean, there's something different about it. Yeah, there's something different. It clicks. It gives you happiness. I mean, it's crazy what a song can do.
Yeah, I know we did a clip on the new TV rights deal for the NBA coming next year with games on ESPN, NBC, Peacock, Amazon. And then now, since then, TNT is filing a lawsuit against the NBA because they feel like they should have been able to match Amazon's rights, blah, blah, blah. But it looks like I'm excited for this new TV deal. I think getting it on NBC is such a big deal. I am bummed about Inside the NBA.
I know.
This will be the final year. I think it was near the end anyway. I do think Barkley is going to work with one of those networks, ESPN, NBC, or Amazon.
Yeah, I can't imagine him not working. But maybe he actually sticks to his word and what he said about retiring. Who knows?
Stop it.
You never know.
He's going to get paid so much money.
When you're in, and not only that, though, but I feel like also when you're in this business, you do see so many people that just keep going. They want to keep going. I think not only because it's like good for their brains as they get older, you know, them physically, all the different things, their motor skills, whatever. But the money, yes. But also it's habit. It's like become their life. And so like when you don't have that in your life anymore and you retire, like what are you supposed to do?
If I'm one of those companies, I'm sorry, I just invested this much money into getting the NBA rights. I'm coming out swinging. I am doing everything I can to acquire Inside the NBA. The cast members, let's go. The production staff.
Successful. But isn't Ernie and like his contract like super weird with Turner? And
yeah,
so
I don't know. He doesn't want to leave. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's loyal. Like, I'm. Yeah.
What is that?
He's Jose and loyal. Come on. I don't know. That was such a dumb reference.
Yeah, it was. That's all right.
Hate myself. But
let's talk about what we witnessed this morning.
Oh, yes.
Team USA taking on Serbia in the Olympics. Group C, the action. There's 27,000 people at this game.
Really?
27,000 people, which is insane. USA beat Serbia 110-84 in a 40-minute game, by the way. That's the other thing that's so interesting, 110 points in 40 minutes. And we know, like, the worldwide competition when it comes to basketball is way more legit than it's ever been.
Yep.
What kind of stood out to you in this first matchup for Team USA?
Well, two different styles of play from the first half to the second. You know, they came out and they were trying to feed Joel Embiid. And I feel like they were trying to play this style of basketball, like, let's have Joel Embiid dominate. Well, the matchup you're going against had some NBA guys, but they had one of the best NBA players in the world in Nikola Jokic, right? And so you look at that matchup alone, Jokic is capable of holding his own, keeping his stance down against someone like Joel Embiid. So, like, their plan wasn't working. Their plan. Their strategy wasn't working. And on top of that, it was ugly basketball. You have some of the best basketball players in the world just staying still. And finally, then when movement started to come in that second half, that's when you and I were talking. We're like, this is, like, you're seeing basketball players just play basketball and not superstars act like stars out there and not move around.
They ran away with it, and it was great on both ends. But what Kevin Durant did. Oh. So KD had not been playing with the exhibition games because he had this calf thing going on. Then we find out in the lead up to the game that, oh no, he's going to play and come off the bench. How many minutes? We'll find out. KD put on an absolute clinic, and he's been such an important piece to U.S. basketball over the years. So to see him, who, you know, we haven't seen him at all. And for him to come in and do that, he was disgusting. He ends up scoring 23 points on 8 of 9 shooting, 6 of 6 from 3.
He was 6 of 6. Yeah. No, I mean, how efficient, how wonderful when he came out. It was fun. It was fun to watch, right? When he knocks on the first shot, everyone's like, oh, yeah, okay, this feels good. And then he, like, kept knocking down his shots. It didn't matter if it was the midi. It didn't matter if it was the long ball. He kept knocking down his shots. It was so smooth. It was special. It was fun. But also, it helped Team USA, like, really stay in this one at first when it felt like things were way too close.
Yeah, Serbia got off to a nice start. They're up, like, 10-2. They call a timeout. Kerr calls a timeout, takes him beat out, puts AD in the game. And then later on in that first quarter, that second unit, I felt like, settled him down. With Anthony Edwards comes in right away with a block that led to that LeBron James and one. Derek White making nice defensive plays.
Give some love, too, for one of the start. Devin Booker did a great job within that starting group, right? He stayed on there even when Steve Kerr was making some of those rotations. It was finally when Book came out. I think it was for KD initially. Right. That's when that first started happening. But, yeah, Devin Booker was one of the only players out there at first that really looked like he was just playing basketball. Like, he was smooth. He was allowing the game to come to him. Like, Joel Embiid, I know we already kind of went over just trying to feed him the basketball down low, but then there's other moments, even this game I told you, when he was, like, stretching the floor and just chucking up a corner three, when I'm like, you got three other shooters out here. You got people moving around now. Like, the flow was a little bit better and he still wasn't flowing. But again, I'm not just trying to shit on his play.
Well, everyone was shitting on his play in the first half. I thought a second half stint was better, but look, there's no denying that Embiid has been a clunky fit. And you saw it in the exhibition games, the physical style of FIBA. You know, Embiid wants to play this, like, slow, methodical game. Well, you know what? Steve Kerr, he wants to play, like, quick decisions. Let's get this ball moving. And I think sometimes you see why it's not really working with Embiid. And, you know, I think Embiid thought his impact could be defensively. Even at times, that hasn't been great. Of course, this is a different matchup going up against Jokic, but Jokic was disgusting with this. I love his facial hair, by the way. I don't know.
A little patchy, but
his little patchy facial hair. Also, let's go ahead and do this too. Let's stop saying that Jokic doesn't love basketball.
He only cares about horse racing.
The guy's playing in the Olympics. He's fired up playing. He's going at Embiid like it's nothing in that first half.
But I'm going to just challenge you a little bit there because you can say that he is playing more for the paycheck. Especially when it comes to playing in the NBA than it is for the love of the game. And then obviously with Serbia, it's like his pride for his country.
If you're no, I completely disagree.
Well, we can disagree.
Playing for the paycheck? Why do you think that?
What do you mean? I mean, that's so many of these guys in the NBA, and that's okay too. Like, not everyone just loves their job and wants to do it because they love it. Like, I don't speak that language because I am obsessed with what I do, and I can't imagine. And, like, I honestly get so mad when people don't have the same type of standards and, like, work ethic and stuff. It's like, no, like, love this, like, put as much time into this. But other people have other things that they want to love and do, and they just want to make the money, do what they need to do, and get out.
I think I just don't look at him as that type of guy.
But
I think you cannot be that good in this league.
You can, though. I mean,
and
like,
not love the game.
There's so many people, I'm sure so many people can relate to this even throughout their lives, whether it's high school or college or AAU. And there's always someone that just, like, gets away with being great but doesn't put in the extra work. Now, sometimes it will catch up to you. But I think with someone like him, he ended up putting in the extra work become one of the best players in the world. And now that he is there, he's still working hard at being the best. I think he does take pride in being one of the best players out there. I truly believe that. But I also think in the back of his head, the motivator are the dollars and being able to support his family. And be like, I don't think he gives a shit about being the MVP. Like, he doesn't.
I think he takes pride in it. I do think
pride is different than, like, if he didn't get it, he would be like, okay, well, I still know I'm the best player, you know?
I just think he is the type that doesn't care about the other things. He just wants to play basketball. He plays basketball, and then when he's done playing basketball, he goes, I want to go home. And I want to go home, hang out with my family, hang out with my horses, and then guess what? I'm going to be back to dominate this league after. Just because he doesn't want to do all the media stuff, and just because he's not doing interviews left and right, people, like, look at him and go, oh, he doesn't love the game.
I disagree with saying, like, he doesn't love the game, but I think there is more of a main motivator being the money and the dollars. And the better you are, the more money and the dollars you can get. So, but hey, we don't know him personally. So.
Yeah, yeah. We got off track.
Yeah, we
did. But yeah, like the Embiid stuff is going to be talked about a lot here. It's like, should they even be playing Embiid? AD seems like he's just a better fit for it. I think being the U.S. men's basketball coach is such a difficult task because you have 12 really awesome players. Mm-hmm. And you have a couple of role guys, right, with Jrue Holiday and Derek White, but a lot of star players. Hell, today, Tatum and Halliburton did not play.
Uh-huh.
They did not play. And somebody like, how do they not play? You can only play so many guys, and you got to figure out who to play. And those for those players, I think it is so challenging too.
You know, Dwayne Wade made a point during the broadcast when talking about Tyrese Halliburton and Jason Tatum, and was talking about how all these guys on Team USA need to check their egos at the door, right? But then on top of that, just understanding that there's going to be different matchups and different teams that they go up against, where Steve Kerr is going to be like, you're up, let's go. It's going to work for you. This is what's going to work for our rotation.
I get like the whole, I know what you're saying. Like, hey, check your egos. I do feel like sometimes
Wade
it's,
said it.
It's easier said than done. Because, I mean, Tyrese Halliburton is the guy on his team.
Sure.
Jason Tatum is the guy on his team. Jason Tatum just won an NBA championship. He can't even get on the floor in this game. So I hear you. Hey, be ready. But it is definitely an adjustment. It's an adjustment when you're used to starting games. You go from starting NBA games, playing 40-plus minutes in high-leverage situations, and here, Olympic time, you're chilling on the bench.
Deuce, I'm not acting like it was easy. I'm just saying what Hall of Famer said. I mean, he said it, so it's like, you know, and he's been, my other point is, he's been there before, and he's been there with some of the best players as well, so he understands, it's a different type of game, it's a different type of team, so when he is saying, you gotta check your ego at the door, I mean, it's because it is, so it's like for your country, it's not just for a league.
And I think the reality, and some people may not like hearing this, but these players are still great. This Olympics, it is kind of about Steph, LeBron, and KD a little bit, right?
Because why? Because they're older?
They're older.
Okay. I
mean, what LeBron did today, the guy is 39 years old, and we say it like every time he plays a game, but I just loved the intensity he played with today.
Yeah.
Now, there are a couple of times I felt like late when they had control that Team USA got a little sloppy with the ball.
And in the beginning.
And in the beginning, too. But, like, he turned it on, and it was like a freight train. I mean, shedding defenders, finishing strong at the rim. He had 21 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists on 9 of 12 shooting at 39 years old. And anyway, my larger point is, these older guys, 39-year-old LeBron James, 30-whatever Steph Curry, 35-year-old KD, like these guys are still great. And this is more about them having this like last time together on this team than it is about some of the younger guys at this point. And I'm not saying that's right, but that's the reality. And those two guys we just talked about, LeBron and KD, put on a show.
That reminds me, don't let me forget to make this point that Dawn Staley said about Caitlin Clark too, when they went back to her and Mike Tirico. But really quick, because I do just kind of going off of some of the older guys like Steph Curry, for example, like you talk about LeBron turning it on in his stat line there, but Steph Curry, he played his same type of game. What does that mean? He was moving without the basketball, setting screens for teammates, making sure to have a nice little curl off his screens, off of whoever was screening for him, and just playing his same game. And I really appreciate that, but I think it's so important for a lot of these other guys to make sure that they know his game to that level and want to reward someone that is so willing to cut and move, especially, again, not like he's dying, but at that age.
Yeah, and it's always tough for the U.S. squad because, you know, their way of, like, getting to know each other is playing some exhibition games and having some practices and some scrimmages, and you got to do it fast. Some of these guys in other countries, they've known each other since they were kids, been playing with each other. So I think there's definitely a challenge at times there, but I don't necessarily have a problem with it being about like LeBron, KD, and stuff, especially when those guys are still playing at an elite level.
That's it.
And that's the reality. You know, if they are forcing these guys, and it's like, oh, LeBron can't play anymore, but hey, we got to have him out there. It's like, no, this guy is still one of the best in the world.
Like Joel Embiid, for example. If one of them were playing like him throughout the entire game, it wouldn't be about that. It would be like, okay, great. Get your touches and you're going to sit down.
And that, I think, is probably something people are going to be looking at going back to Embiid is like, okay, like, do you have to play this guy?
Do you think too, are we being too hard where it's like, maybe it was just an off game as well?
Well, he hasn't looked good in the exhibitions either. You know, and you just think with like Anthony Davis's mobility, his ability to defend, like he does, they don't have defensive 3 seconds in these rules.
Yeah.
That he's a better fit for this style. It doesn't mean that like Embiid's a bum or something, but we're talking about sacrificing. Like, he may be the guy that has to sacrifice some minutes out there. Maybe they want to play Bam a little more too, because Bam has the ability, he can bring up the ball. He's versatile too.
That one play toward the end of the game when Bam, I mean, he squared up, just got low. I mean, this is such a big guy. Got low, crossover between the legs, came back over and went right or whatever it was.
It's a little midi.
That's what it was. And then he just had like crossover between the legs. Yes, little midi right there near the basket. It was just such a beautiful play by him, especially just the understanding of the paint was packed, right? And so you're exactly right. When you do see some of these other big guys that are so mobile and how not only the NBA game has evolved, but like you said in the beginning of this podcast, you're seeing around the world how the game has evolved and how it just keeps getting better.
They were awesome shooting the ball from 3-2. They were 18 of 32 from three. I mean, you're just not going to beat this team if they're shooting that way. Yeah. But they were getting exactly what you want. They were able to get inside the paint and the ball was moving around. When the U.S. plays that style, it's so fun to watch.
Yep.
And on the other side, when they like early in this game, we're like, what is this? You're just chucking here
and not forcing. Moving. Yeah.
It felt like it got off to that clunky start. And when it's bad, it looks hideous. But they end up beating one of the best teams in probably the second best team in their group, Serbia, 110-84. Coming up on Wednesday, they have South Sudan, noon Pacific time. That's on January 31st.
So. And South Sudan just won today.
Puerto Rico.
Yep. So, and that's Wenyen Gabriel.
Yeah.
On that squad. Ooh.
Shout out former Sacramento Kings.
Get ready
icon.
There. Yeah.
Any other thoughts from this game?
Yes, I guess. I don't want to make fun of it.
I know what you're doing.
What? The
D-Wade stuff?
No, I was going to. Well, the. Damn! That and the dramatics, how some of these Serbian basketball players just turn into little soccer players out there.
Oh, flopping a little bit?
It's just a little flopping.
Yeah, the NBA's turned into a flop fest too. But yeah, there was that one play where Embiid made contact maybe with a player's face and you thought the player might have been dead.
Yeah.
I thought they were actually
going to get a stretcher.
No, I saw they had the body bag ready to go. You know, I'm like, let's just keep playing.
And what's so funny though, because then also the game is so much more physical. And I love when there was these moments of physicality they would get away with stuff. And I would start to make fun of the NBA for being a little beach league. But I'm kidding, obviously. I think it's important to keep so many players safe. But anyway, there's some of those dramatics. And the Dwayne Wade stuff, just really quick, because I don't think it's still green in that role as an analyst.
People are way too hard on this stuff.
And I agree. But see, here's the thing. Noah Eagle is like perfect. So like Noah Eagle's so good at making everyone so much better. Yeah. But the only thing, it's Hall of Famer Dwayne Wade. I should not hear you 100 times just go, splash, he is him. Oh, snap. Look at his peripheral vision. No, Dwayne, I want you to tell me the whys of the game. It's such a disservice when you're not analyzing and breaking down each. It doesn't have to be every single possession up and down. Have fun with Noah like you were. But at the same time, like, I want to hear your expertise of why Steph Curry was so open on that play. Was it because the screen was perfectly set and nobody's feet were moving and, oh my God, it's just this, whatever it is. Just tell me.
Well, this is significant because it seems like Dwayne Wade is going to be a big part of the NBA broadcast going forward. There's been a lot of talk that he may be on one of like the A broadcast team for NBC.
I love
when they have the NBA rights. So it's important for him to get these reps.
Yes.
Look, I am with you. I think we watched other broadcasts with him. I think it was a Canada game. And it felt like he was way better in this in that one. I felt like this one, he's loose. Because he knows all the guys. Mm-hmm. He's a little more loose. Like, oh, he's giving a lot of love to Bam. And, of course, LeBron.
Oh, my God. His mom calls him Bam, so I have to call him Bam. We know.
Yeah, he did that three times. And then he did his pronouns are he, him, three times.
Yep.
Twice with LeBron, once with KD.
Green.
Yes, but at a base level, I think, when you're talking about someone that's doing a broadcast, you want the person to be likable. Dwayne Wade is likable.
Very likable.
And the fact that he is loose.
I love his energy, too.
The fact that he is loose right now is a great thing.
Agreed.
And so if you can be like, hey.
Coach it.
Keep that, like, the warmness that you have, the likability you have, and then mix in what you talked about. I was like, hey, break down this a little more. I think with more reps, he's going to be great. And, like, Noah Eagle is the Victor Wembanyama of like broadcasters. He is a young phenom, except Victor's 7'7", and I think Noah's like 5'7" or 5'.
We'll have to
5'4".
Ask him. Yeah. So they're
is
just.
Is he 5'7"?
I mean, but both elite in what they do.
Yes.
So who gives a shit?
Yeah. So I think I'm excited for that broadcast going forward with Noah Eagle. It's just great. And I think a lot of sports fans are aware of that, but NBA fans, if you have League Pass, maybe you see him do games every once in a while. He was a Clippers radio voice for a couple of years, but now he's on like a big stage with NBC, and he's going to be an important part to their NBA broadcast. But I'm with you on Dwayne Wade today. I felt like, okay, we got the Bam thing. All right. Yeah, yeah.
And I don't, and then that's, but you know what I love is that like when you do see him on this broadcast, you go, oh, he like, he's going to get there. Like, he's totally going to get there, and it's going to be so fun to see. And again, I like seeing good people, good things happen to good people and people that work hard. One of my other notes, one of my last broadcasting notes. So when they threw it back to Mike Tirico and Dawn Staley in studio, Tirico asked Dawn Staley about creating Team USA for women.
Yeah, forming the team. She's a part of the committee.
Thank you. And he asked, you know, like Caitlin Clark didn't make that. And she goes, yeah, if she was playing the way she is right now, she would have made it. And that's what's crazy to see is that, like, you know, she's a rookie and we didn't think like she had it. And then she's playing like this.
I will say this.
I'm not saying the words right, but
I thought that answer was interesting.
Okay.
Caitlin Clark's been awesome. Yes, she got off to...
She's a rookie!
Her team got off to a slow start because I think they at one point played like 10 games in 11 days. Uh-huh. Like, the WNBA front-loaded that schedule, especially pre-Olympics. We got to get Caitlin Clark playing in as many games as possible, on TV as many games. And the team was kind of a clunky fit at times.
Yeah.
It just felt like they were struggling. Well, what do you know? They get some more rest. She gets a little more comfortable. And she is putting up sensational numbers in the WNBA. Yeah, I think it is like, and it's no disrespect to all the other talented players who are playing on the Olympic roster, but like Caitlin Clark is already one of the best players in the world, and she should have been there. So I'm not outraged by it. I'm not one of those. But it's funny to me, like saying, well, yeah, look how she's playing now. She would have been in. I'm like, Dawn, come on, man. You saw her in college.
Yeah.
You see the potential in the WNBA early. Like, to suggest that just because now she's gotten it together, oh, she probably would have made it. Come on.
Yeah. I don't know. It was an interesting comment. And again, going back to like when we were even talking about Tyrese Halliburton and Jason Tatum not playing, like there's just so many of these things. You have so many great players on both of these squads that, you have to make some difficult decisions.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, the other thing that came to an end, doesn't make any sense. What? Where is it going?
Oh, I like that.
Las Vegas, Summer League.
That
it's
came
over.
To an end.
I was just thinking about how your voice is a lot better as this podcast goes on. So congratulations. So we went to the Vegas Summer League. We were there in Vegas for 6 nights. Oh. And let me tell you, 6 nights in Vegas is amazing in a lot of ways, but you come back and you feel beaten down. Not because Deuce Mason's outraging. But when you're watching basketball and then staying up late at night, like, oh, it's 3 a.m. Oh, God. Yeah, you come back and you're like, whoa, what? Where am I?
But even when you're in a gym from like it's morning time, like you just ate an egg sandwich and then you go to the gym and then you're leaving and it's dark. And you're like, wait, the day is actually over. And then Vegas goes, oh, no, it's not over. Pump oxygen into every single casino.
You will stay awake
for 10 more hours. So.
I love Vegas Summer League. It is just so fun to have games going on all day long. I mentioned this before. For those who don't know, the setup, you've got two buildings, right, at UNLV. You have Thomas and Mack and then what is known as the Pavilion now. And these two basketball venues are connected. Thomas and Mack is the bigger venue. The Pavilion that used to be known as Cox Pavilion feels like more of like a high school gym.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah. No, it's like, or big junior college gym.
Okay. But there are games going on all the time. So you go, oh, it's halftime at the Pavilion. I'm going to walk across the concourse. You don't have to go outside and go to Thomas and Mack. So it's basketball all day. If you're a basketball junkie, it's like the place to be.
Then we also went to an Aces game.
We went to an Aces game. That was so fun.
It was the best basketball that we had watched all week. And this is, it's no disrespect to Summer League basketball, because again, I would watch NBA Summer League basketball all the time, but then watching that basketball and then ending the trip with watching a WNBA game, Aces against Chicago Sky.
How about the Sky with the upset in the game?
Huh? It was, I mean, the basketball being played out there was just, I was like, oh, I needed this. Just like breath of fresh air.
Well, in the atmosphere inside that building was amazing. Where the Aces play, Michelob Ultra Arena, it holds, I think, like 10,000, 12,000. Anyway, it was packed, but the roof is lower.
Yeah.
And it just holds all the noise. The crowd was into it, and the basketball was great. I want to rewind there.
Okay.
So Chelsea Gray, who plays on the Aces, the point god, she worked on Kings broadcast. I don't know. She's like 5 to 7 games, maybe 10 games.
Yeah.
And on pre and post.
She's my best friend. Yes.
Anyway, she knew we were coming to Vegas for Summer League, and she goes, hey, let me know if you want to go like come to a shoot around. We're like, yeah, sure. So we get there in Vegas and she goes, hey, I come to shoot around. I'll pick you up from the hotel at like 8:30 in the morning on game day. I'm like, oh my God. Yeah. So Chelsea Gray, who's just one of our favorites, picks us up. We get to watch a shoot around, which is like not open to the public. The media is not in there. We're sitting there. It's me and Morgan. We're watching all the Aces go through their routine, and then they go through their shoot around where they talk about points of emphasis. They run through a couple of plays, and then fast forward to that night where one of the first plays of the game they run.
Ugh.
And I'm like, I hit Morgan like, oh my God, we saw that in shoot around. But it was just such a cool thing to see. I felt like I was witnessing history a little bit, because I'm like, this is one of the premier WNBA teams. Like, of this generation, right? Back-to-back champions, you know, Becky Hammon, known as being a tremendous head coach. And we're watching them go through like
All these little
the details, fine tuning before close. A game.
Yeah, it was. That was really special. Like I know there's so many people that get to always go into practices and see these shoot arounds even before media, especially if you are national broadcasters, you get to experience that. But that is something that you and I got to experience with the California Classic when we got to go into some of the Kings practices, and then obviously being able to see even the Aces shoot around. It's just something that I will never ever take for granted. I know we love basketball and we love watching it, but when you get to see people tweak and learn and listen to each other and all the little tiny details, there's just something else that's so special about it.
It was a cool experience. Yeah. And then we got to watch all the Kings. Well, the games when we were there, where they play three times when we were there, I think.
Yep.
Three times. So we saw three Kings games. Before we get to that, the one thing, just talking to people from around the league, a lot of people like the DeMar DeRozan move. A lot of people like the move for Sacramento. They think it can really lift them, which got me even more excited because, you know me, I can talk myself into anything. And it's probably my worst trait that as we inch closer to a season, I get a little irrational. And I'm trying
every
to get
season.
Better. I'm trying to get better at
no,
it.
No,
okay?
You're not.
But I can tell you, when we start doing a podcast like early October, I'm going to be like, dude, Morgan, but what if Jalen McDaniels like has a major bounce back year? He could be a defensive stopper. You know, it's the same thing. I think I remember during the preseason where I was like, man, Colby Jones looks like he could play right now. Or, hey, Chris Duarte, you know, you see it, then you see a couple of things and you just go, oh my God, your eyes get wide and you start thinking about amazing possibilities.
Yeah.
But I think with the DeMar DeRozan fit, I've been excited about it, but hearing people around the league, from teams to broadcasters, people just around the league, that they really like the pickup.
You know what you're getting, though, too. Yeah. You know, like unlike draft picks or even other role players from other teams, whatever it is, like you know what you're getting with DeMar DeRozan, not only as a basketball player, but as a teammate and as a person. And I think that was one of the other things that we kept hearing when we were at NBA Summer League was like, oh, like I've never heard one person say a bad thing about this man. So he's obviously like a serial killer behind the scenes because he cannot be this great of a human being, which it sounds like he really is. And just the amount of people from broadcasters to obviously they're not just broadcasters. Sorry, the computer just did something. So from broadcasters to just people within the league in so many different roles talking about this person and who he is as a human being, I just think that can benefit a locker room like the Sacramento Kings in so many different ways.
Yeah. We've done a lot of DeMar DeRozan glazing as
what's that? Oh, is that what the cool kids are saying?
Look, dude, I know you struggle to talk to people like me from Gen Z, but yes.
From Gen Z, like, so if like a Gen Zer isn't saying someone like me from Gen Z,
I didn't know I said it like that. Did I say it like
you
that?
Kind of did. It was gross.
We've given a lot of DeMar DeRozan love.
Yes.
So
blazing.
Okay. You can't say that,
dude. I learned another word that you're not supposed to say.
I mean, you could say it. Just
well,
funny.
You can.
You just said it funny.
But it or that you can.
Am I gonna have to censor this?
I don't think so. But it's it's. It's like, you know how like everyone would be like, oh my God, I love that song. It's a bop.
No.
So bop means like you're calling someone like that, someone that gets around, like that's a hoe or something. Can you believe that? I learned that on TikTok. And I was just like, what? I can't use bop anymore? But I never used bop.
I was going to say, when did you ever use it?
I don't know, but people use it in the 90s, like kids bop.
That's the only time. No one else used it.
Oh man, yeah, I never said like I love this bop. Like no, it was like
no,
this is my jam. Maybe. So anyway, cool kid talk is over.
All right, let's talk a King Summer League for a second. I think one element of the Summer League I loved, and it's not a surprise, we saw in the California Classic and then in Vegas, you know, Keon Ellis really handling the ball. I felt like he looked more comfortable handling the ball during the Summer League. Seeing him run pick and roll situations was nice, orchestrate the offense. Not that he's going to be doing that, obviously, all the time in the NBA, but you want him to be comfortable in situations when he has the ball. And I felt like watching that play-in game against the Pelicans, it looked like outside of De'Aaron Fox, nobody was comfortable. I still have the play in that game where like the Kings were making a run against the Pelicans and it was in transition and Keon Ellis did not look confident with the ball and gave it up. It was a turnover and it just swung the game. And I felt like I saw more of that. And with Summer League, I don't get caught up so much in numbers, shooting percentages. To me, it's about like, do they look a little more comfortable doing things that they weren't necessarily comfortable with last year? Is Keon still looking like an elite defensive player?
Their feel for the game.
Their feel, exactly. Like, you're going to miss shots. Are you taking good shots? Are you making the right decisions? I'm not necessarily caught up with the end result of a make or a miss. It's, are you taking good shots? Keon has showed the ability to knock down shots in the NBA. So I'm not ever concerned. I don't even know what his final numbers were. Someone like Colby Jones, I'm looking at his shooting and going, hey, like your shooting hasn't been consistent in the G League or in your brief NBA moments. How's that look now at this level? And he had some moments where it did not look great at all. And then he had a game where he couldn't miss anything. Yep. So I thought there were some definitely good, but I'm not walking away from King Summer League going, oh my God, there's look at this standout. Oh, this was incredible.
I don't think that's what this Summer League was about anyway. Yeah. You know, and I mean, I say that, but then again, I guess like if someone was tremendous and stood out, like even for example, someone like Mason Jones, who has put so much time and work into his body, but then also is trying to show teams, not just the Kings, but like teams, like I am an NBA player, right? So like, of course you want to have those standout moments, but sometimes being that standout isn't just being the star player out there scoring the basketball. It's doing all the little things. Are you setting the screens? Are you moving without the basketball? Are you jumping on every single loose ball? And I think with all three of those guys, you can pinpoint certain things that really stood out in a positive way with them. And Keon Ellis, going back to him, yes, the way that he was handling the ball with confidence just looked more seasoned, right? And I feel like that's what you were going to see from him anyway because of the experience and time he got with the Sacramento Kings as a starter. Getting those minutes are so very important, not just for what it can do for your game, but also what it can do for your mental game. So that was fun to see.
Speaking of that, do you think he's got the edge to be the starting shooting guard next year? It's obviously
I don't know. Kevin Herter, because
Malik.
I was so wrong in so many different ways when Keon Ellis was with the Stockton Kings a while back, like his first year, I guess, let's say. And I remember being like, God, there's just certain things I felt like weren't going to translate to the NBA. And he always had that defensive mind and ability, and I loved it. And then he started getting more aggressive on the offensive end. I was like, ooh, okay, we're seeing something different. But then I haven't seen too many players within the Stockton Kings be able to just go up to the big squad and show up. And he's been one of them. And he's proven me, I could say proven me wrong, but it's just shown me like sometimes you just don't always understand or know what they're doing behind the scenes and what can work better for their game. And sometimes being around better players can even work better for the game. And I think he is one of those guys. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think
I just went on a tangent. Sorry.
Everyone is down on Kevin Herter because of last year.
Yeah.
And then he gets hurt. So I don't think Herter's stock could be any lower with fans in Sacramento at this point. He, in my opinion, is not as bad as he played last year.
Yeah.
He missed shots. You know, I think the early training camp stuff where like Brown was messing with the idea of Duarte in there. I think it might have shook him a little bit. But even hearing Herter talk after the season, he said he learned a lot about last season, like going through some of those tough moments. I think Herter can be valuable to this team if he is on the roster. And I think that could be even off the bench. You know, he's got good size at 6'7". I still think he's got that shooting ability, of course, even though he didn't shoot a great last year. And he can make plays with the ball. I mean, if you have a bench that has Herter and
he can make
and
plays Monk, off the ball. He's a good, I mean, he's a willing cutter. He's someone that moves well. And because he is a bigger body when he is slashing, like you can get it to his hands. But yeah, I because of what happened last year too, because of what happened during training camp, because you shoved Sasha in the mix and we're thinking that, oh, well, he's not coming all the way over here to not be a starter. I mean, look at the way that these people are talking about him.
Yeah.
And even seeing just some of his EuroLeague play, like it was going to make sense. I just have no idea. What I do know is that Mike Brown definitely wants to put a squad out there that is going to give him the most on the defensive end. I feel like that's what he wants ultimately, no matter what. So that's why when you do ask about Keon, even over Kevin, it's like, yeah, maybe that's the direction he goes.
Actually,
I don't know.
I think it works with that group that would be out there. Cause you know, Sabonis, Fox, Keegan, and DeRozan are going to be in that starting lineup. Like that's going to happen. And you think about the offensive firepower out there with Fox and DeRozan. We know what Keegan can do as a shooter.
Mm-hmm.
I think Keegan's going to get better looks. Keon got fantastic looks last year. And the other thing is teams weren't like contesting him that much.
Yeah.
They weren't coming out hard. Well, he has proven in his time in the NBA, he can knock it down from 3-point land, did in the G League too. So I can't imagine that he's going to get as clean of looks this year, but he honestly might with what else is out there on the floor with him.
Yeah, I guess.
And then defensively, I completely agree. I think the Kings defense shifted dramatically once he was put in that lineup to have two guys like Fox and Ellis out there.
Again, going off of track record of what Mike Brown has done, even with someone like Malik Monk, like, do we see a world where he's ever going to be?
No.
Okay.
I think I am resigned to the fact that he's going to be the guy that comes off the bench. And I think last year there were times, you know, we had talked about on our podcast, like when Herter was really struggling, the Kings like got off to weird starts, like just put Monk in there. Let's see. I'm cool with Monk coming off the bench. And I think there's probably some concern that, oh, is Monk cool with it? I think Monk wants to start. There is not an NBA player on the planet that goes, you know what? I'd rather come off the bench. Mm-hmm. No, you want to be out there when the PA guy is announcing your name. You want to be out there in intros. You want to be the guy. Starting feels important, right? But I think Monk also understands that he is going to play a big role on this team.
Like
he matters. They gave him the contract because they believe in that. And I think he can own that role as a sixth man as he has the last 2 years. So as long as he's playing minutes, I really don't care.
Yeah, no, I'm big minutes and I'm definitely with you on that. So I guess like ultimately we don't know what we're going to see with that shooting guard position.
It's going to be a battle in camp, I think.
It's going to be another battle. And, you know, Kevin Herter went through it last year, and now he's doing it this year, coming back from an injury.
And I'm glad you brought that because I think that's the big difference, right? Last year, I don't think Kevin Herter was going into camp thinking, I'm going to have to fight for my starting shooting guard spot. I think in his mindset, he goes, we just had a good year. We won 48 games.
Yep.
We had the number one offensive rating in league history at the time.
Yeah.
I'm the shooting guard. And then he come to camp and it's like, no. You got to work for it. Or I think this year, I think he understands like, all right, my name's been in trade rumors. I had a tough year last year. I had the injury. Ellis did some nice things in the starting lineup. Like, I'm going to have to earn this shit.
Yep.
So and it's in not some gonna, ways, I think it would be a good thing.
And it's not going to be on the offensive end that you have to earn it. Because like even if you're not shooting well, like we said, like he's someone that can move without the basketball. It's, are you doing what is needed on the defensive end? If you want to keep talking Kings, that's fine. But I feel like because we kind of went into Keon Summer League and there's something else with Summer League I wanted to ask you about.
Okay.
Because I know, obviously, you and I, we even did like some NBA streams and everything. We got to see a lot of different rookies. I was going to ask you if any of the rookies around the league really stood out to you.
I think the first name that pops off to me is Stephon Castle.
Okay.
From the Spurs.
Yeah. And we called some of his games.
Saw him in the California Classic. Saw him in Vegas, too. He's smooth. He is smooth. And
good feel.
You think about his game at UConn. It was like, you know, he didn't always have the ball in his hands. And it feels like he sacrificed a lot. And he won. So it didn't really matter. And now he's in a situation with San Antonio where, you know, he's still young. They're going to allow him to grow. They add Chris Paul, which I think just helps him. Like, if you have a young guard in this league and you get to learn from Chris Paul, that's a huge win. Castle has, to me, he carries himself like an older player.
Yeah.
Right?
Like an adult.
I think the question with him is like the shooting, but I also think they believe that they can help him in that situation. His ability to finish through contact, his ability to play make, what he can do defensively, the pride he takes on that end. I think the Spurs got a really good player in Stephon Castle.
Okay. So for them, pairing him with Wemby, that's great.
Yeah. I mean, and the Spurs offseason, like they'll be better next year. If you've seen any highlights of Victor Wembanyama playing some international ball for France, yeah, be scared. Because this guy is going to be disgustingly good.
And no matter how you feel about Harrison Barnes here in Sacramento,
he's going to help them.
Exactly. Like, especially because he won't, things will not rely, there will be so many things that aren't relying on him, right? When it comes to the offensive end. And then defensively, okay, someone gets by him. Hi, you got Wemby in the middle protecting the rim.
Yeah, Harrison Barnes can still play in this league, and you're right. Yes. If he's in the right situation, maybe you don't notice some of those weaknesses he may have. But to me, it's bigger than that too. It's like Chris Paul and HB are like professionals, and to have those guys in your locker room, Harrison doesn't miss games. Like I think it was something that really lacked with San Antonio. They had a lot of young guys last year. They didn't have really anyone they were comfortable at the point guard spot. Now you got Chris Paul in there, but you have Stephon Castle too, who's going to be guided along next season. I like what they did. Now, are they going to be a playoff team? I don't think so, but I think they're going to be annoyingly competitive.
Yes.
Where you're going to be like, damn it, Spurs. And Victor is a game changer.
Yep. This whole Western Conference. Yeah.
Yeah. So Stephon Castle, I thought Reed Sheppard was fun. You know, we've talked about this throughout the draft process. We're not college basketball junkies. We're watching NBA all the time. So our first like real taste of watching these guys,
especially
in the summer league.
Yeah. And in person, you know, for the most part too, which I think makes, I didn't realize this until I started going to summer league of what a big difference it really does make. And just, you see how these players, these young players interact with one another and them doing all the little extra things as well. Yeah. It does make a big difference of how you actually analyze them.
So Reed Sheppard was fun. I thought Bub Carrington, like he's raw, he's young, but he's got good feel for the game too. Will the shooting come along? Like, sure, all those are questions, but this guy's like, what, 18, 19 years old. I like his size. I like his competitiveness. I liked him.
I
really did. So the Summer League didn't have the same level of like hype as previous years, because usually you have like some marquee talent at number one. You didn't have that this year.
But it was still, that's the thing. Like, there was still usually a player, a name that you would know from every single team that you'd be like, oh, let's watch that matchup. Let's get excited about that as well.
From the Kings standpoint, the one guy we did not mention, someone that had some fun moments, Boogie Ellis, who went to USC. The Kings are inviting him to training camp.
Yay.
He's fun, man. He just goes out there and plays hard. And in smallish guard, like, okay, does he have any crazy future with the Kings? Probably not. He's probably not going to make the team. I would not be surprised if you see him with the Stockton Kings, though.
Awesome.
And yeah. He had that interview, I think, during the California Classic. Yeah, that's when it was, when Sophia Jones asked him about, like, being a dog out there. And he's like, well, they asked for a dog. You want a dog? You get a dog, or something like that. And I'm like, hell yeah. He goes out there and competes his ass off.
I saw someone at Summer League with a shirt on that had like a pit bull and his face on the pit bull. Like,
I think it was his family member.
Oh, so cute. Yeah. So cute.
So that's cool to see. Other Kings notes. We were on because they signed Amar DeRozan, Jordan McLaughlin from Minnesota. Oh, yeah. Who, by the way, Timberwolves fans love Jordan McLaughlin.
Really?
Yeah. He's another guy that is kind of that floor general. No one's going to be like, oh, he's a locked-down defensive player, but he just does the right things out there. And when you need maybe a third point guard,
I was going to say, you need that depth.
Spot minutes, like, he's really good guy to have on this team, especially when you consider like the Kings just lost a guard in Devin Carter, who's going to miss like at least 6 months, which is just a bummer. They also signed Orlando Robinson the other day, the big man who last played with the Miami Heat. Last season, he played like 36 games in Miami. And then in the summer league, he played for the Houston Rockets. Awesome in the summer league.
You did an entire breakdown video.
I did. I realized after I did a 5-minute YouTube video on Orlando Robinson, I looked at the clock. I'm like, I just spent 3.5 hours doing this because I was watching like all these clips of him from last year. And look,
psycho.
24 years old. I think he's got the ability to knock down the three. Wasn't a high volume guy last year. He was 8 of 15 from three, 4 of 4 from the corner. He shot it well in the summer league. 6'10", but a 7'4" wingspan. The Kings have Sabonis. They've got Alex Len, and now they add Orlando Robinson. We don't know what his deal is and how much of it's guaranteed. Remember last year, they signed Nerlens Noel and then brought Nemias Keita back on like a normal deal, not a two-way deal, but they didn't have guaranteed deals.
Yep.
And then once JaVale McGee became available, they waived both of those guys.
Yeah.
Noel didn't play in the NBA last year. Keita goes to Boston on a two-way deal. So who the hell knows, like, if Robinson is going to be on this team come opening night? I'm sure it's like one of those partial guarantee contracts. But I think there's a level of intrigue there when you've got Eric Spoelstra talking about his approach to the game, how hard he works, his competitiveness.
Absolutely.
He did so on the video I watched, he does some nice things defending the pick and roll. There can be some matchups that are going to be tough for him, but I think it's worth a look.
I was going to say, how old is he? I was going to ask. 24. Oh, you did actually know his age. Yeah, and even that. I mean, you look at the age range, too, of just being, you know, on the younger side of things as well and having that length. Like, you don't need to sit here and sell yourselves on Orlando Robinson, but at the same time, when we do keep talking about the Kings bench, the depth, and what has been wanted to be added has been that length, has been that size. And now you're adding guys with some of that wingspan, some good guys. So, yeah.
I have a question that you'll love.
What?
Do the Kings have enough to be a top six team in the West as currently constructed?
I hate that question. I don't. I mean, it's like.
If you closed your eyes and said, hey, Morgan, the Kings are going to be the sixth seed. Do you go make a face like, what? No. Or are you like, I can see that. Or you're like, they're in.
I mean, I thought they were going to be better last year, you know, and even with the West getting better, I thought. Man. So like the West just got even better. But here's the thing. Even that a couple years ago when they made the playoffs, my biggest thing was talking about the Western Conference and just the competition and how difficult it was. Obviously, things change, injuries, Kings playing great, health, all these different things were happening, which led to so much success in the Western Conference. So I look at this year, I look at the offseason for a lot of these teams, and I go, I can't make an answer.
Why are you whispering?
Because it's the same thing when you ask me about Keon Ellis and like, can you, it's like, yeah, I could see it. Same thing. Sure, I can see it.
That was a question. No one said you have to like predict it and be right. But
I don't care about predicting and being right. It's not about being right.
So you could see. You see a path.
I mean, you talk. If you were to tell me like fourth seed, I'd say like, okay, no, like six, you're giving me, you know.
Yeah.
Give me some like.
I think padding. I think ceiling for me.
Yeah.
I could see a fourth seed.
Okay.
If everything broke right for them. But yeah, I think they're going to. OKC got better.
Way better.
Hartenstein and Caruso. Plus, you know, Chet's going to be better next year. SGA's looked awesome. He was awesome last year, you know, in the MVP conversation. Minnesota, still be pretty good. Still be pretty damn good, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But they lost Kyle Anderson.
So. They lost Slow-Mo.
Which, I mean, obviously he played a role. So
the Clippers, probably not going to be as good. They're dropping. Of course, they lose Paul George. Is Kawhi going to be healthy? Yeah. You know,
same question.
But you could also make a case like, oh, they could be in the play-in conversation. Right. They could fight for like a sixth seed, right? They were fourth last year. Dallas was fifth. Dallas got better, I think. Unless I'm missing something. And I like Derek Jones Jr. I like the vibe that they had last year. But I go, you had Klay Thompson. You had Najee Marshall. Mm-hmm. They just picked up Dinwiddie again and Quentin Grimes.
And you add experience of being in the NBA finals. Like that alone with most of your squad still together just elevates this team, in my opinion.
And I know you said something that you're hearing Luka's getting like an Ozempic prescription. Is that what you said? Because if that happens, it's over.
Oh my God. Wait, what if he did? Like, why not?
I don't know. It was a joke. I don't.
Oh, Ozempic. He should.
I've been saying this every year for the last few years. If Luka, just please, Luka, this offseason, you got to, no drinking, no sugar. Just come in elite, elite shape, because you're already great as it is. He is another level. And once he gets there, it's going to be scary for the rest of the league.
He's still on the younger side of things too. Like, that's the other thing you have to realize. Like, his body is still going to change
and as guess what?
He matures.
With that said, they're going to be one of the best teams in the West next year.
Yes.
So we label that. Denver, to me, I don't know. I think they're dropping off a bit. They add Westbrook, which is interesting. They lose KCP.
They
gave Reggie Jackson away because of their cap space situation. I don't think anyone that could look at Denver today and say they got better. I think they got worse. They're going to rely on some younger guys to having to step in and fill a void.
But even when we looked at them last year, and then they would have to go to their bench and their depth, and we would talk about how, oh, this isn't enough, and this is why they were still what, number two in the West last year?
Sure.
So they finished second in the Western Conference, and I think when you
so they're still going to be good.
Yes.
So even if they drop off a little bit, still going to be good. So out of the teams that made the top six last year, okay, OKC, Denver, Minnesota, Clippers, Dallas, this last one, Phoenix.
Interesting.
Dude, they pick up Tyus Jones yesterday. Like a one-year, $3.3 million deal. Think about last year. They did not have a point guard.
Devin Booker would say, F you. I mean, I'm
and
a point guard.
And that's fine. You can tell, but he's not a point guard. And that's fine. He can handle the ball. But to have someone that can allow Devin Booker to play off ball sometimes, so that can organize you, that can defend, having someone that can just handle the ball when Booker's off the floor, it gives them something. Their offseason, you know, a couple intriguing draft picks, Ryan Dunn, who knows if he's able to play, but what he did defensively in college, disgusting. They get Monte Morris, Mason Plumlee, drafted Dunn, Iguodala, hired Mike Budenholzer as head coach.
Oh, yeah.
And then you bring in Tyus Jones. Think about everything that went wrong for them last year. They almost won 50 games. They were the sixth seed. So the top six.
Wild.
You can make a case that the order may be different, but you could definitely make a case that those could be the six teams again.
Yeah. I mean, when you put it like that, yes, but you absolutely could.
Now you start looking around the rest of the West. The Lakers literally have not made any moves besides adding J.J. Redick.
And Bronny.
Good point. You're Thank right. You. Lakers number one seed
don't
now.
Don't be nice. The Pelicans,
I don't know. And is that okay to say?
We said this last year in the beginning of the season. We literally had that same analysis for them.
And they add DeJounte Murray, which I think is going to help them. But I think the one like angle of this now is like this Brandon Ingram thing's hanging over. All right. His contract situation. Is he going to stay there? Are they going to move him? He was in trade rumors. No one wanted him. Oh, is he max? They have that. You've got Trey Murphy. You got Herb Jones. You still have CJ. You had DeJounte Murray. It's like, how are you maximizing Trey Murphy? How are you trying to get the most out of Herb Jones when you have all these pieces? They lose Valanciunas. The center position looks weak at the moment. But with all that said, you still have got Murray, Zion. You've got B.I. when he's locked in. He's a damn good player. Herb Jones, one of the best defensive players in the game.
And they know how to kick the Sacramento Kings ass.
Yes, the Kings. When they if the Kings win next year, it's going to be a moment.
Parade.
In Sacramento.
Parade.
Yeah. But they're going to be in the mix,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Okay.
We know the Kings. We talked about them. I have a belief that the Kings can be in the top six. Mm-hmm. Getting DeRozan just makes them better, right?
Okay.
They're just having another guy that can go get a bucket, taking pressure off De'Aaron Fox, making them more difficult to guard.
Also making some real changes to this roster too. Cause I feel like a lot of it last year after a really good year making the playoffs was really running it back and running it back because they weren't trying to mortgage a lot of the future and screw up a whole bunch of things that went well. Like, I don't blame them in so many different ways. But then as you saw it happen is when you start to blame, you go, holy shit, there's tweaks that are needed to be made. I feel like tweaks were not only made by adding someone in DeMar DeRozan, but also to the depth of this team. Now, is that depth, on this roster going to be good enough to beat out some of these other Western Conference teams? Well, I think it depends on what Mike Brown can actually form with this squad.
That's why I'm bummed out by the Devin Carter injury.
I know.
Because I feel like he could have helped him now. And so that one hurts. But Sacramento will be in the mix. Golden State.
Never count them out with Steph.
They got Buddy Hield. You mentioned slow-mo.
Oh, shit.
Kyle Anderson, D'Anthony Melton.
Yeah.
Yeah, as long as they have Steph, I feel like they're relevant. Yep. I cannot wait to see Draymond lose his mind playing with Buddy Hield. When Buddy Hield makes a defensive mistake.
He's going to punch him in the face.
It's going to be like, crazy.
Oh, my God.
They're just so small, too. Like, everyone talks about the Kings. I was like, that team's pretty small. So I have listed the 10 teams from last year.
Yeah.
Then you start going down the list. Houston? They were pretty competitive last year. Utah, I put them out. Whatever, they're going to.
Sure. Grizz.
Memphis.
Grizz.
Yeah. Memphis.
Yeah.
They were the number two seed 2 years ago.
Yep.
They're going to be better.
They're going to be better. Jaw's going to be better.
Zach Edey.
They're going to. Oh, my. Well, yeah.
Jaren Jackson Jr. And then we talk about the Spurs.
And we already did talk about the Spurs. But, like, the Spurs are not going to end up being one of the worst teams in the Western Conference next season.
And even if they are, what's that mean?
Right.
You know, they could still, like I said, I think they'll be, at worst case, annoyingly competitive, where you're just like, God, there's not an easy out. Like, they're going to. If I told you the Spurs could win 40 games next year, I don't think that would be shocking.
Yeah.
It just all depends on what kind of step Victor takes.
Again, our take right now is going to be completely different as we get into December, right? Like, sure, you're just going to see. No. And I guess my point is to, like, that's why I cannot wait for the NBA season to start, because right now it's like scarier than shit. And I want to see if that actually is the way that a lot of things do continue.
Embrace it. You know what I love about it? What? Is because this offseason, the Kings didn't stand pat and go, well, you know, we won 48 games that 1 year. We won 46. We'd be competitive again. They went, no. We need to try to go get a player.
Oh, yeah.
And DeMar DeRozan makes them better. The Kings have a path to win 50-plus games
they
in this.
It,
I sound like John. I've been watching some John King. I've been watching a lot of political stuff lately. And I could say, like John King, there's a path. There's a path for the Kings to win 50-plus games. Mm-hmm. There is a path. It's going to be ultra competitive. I can't wait.
That was scary.
So, Morgan, have we determined, for you, could you see, can you squint and see them in a top six? Can you squint and see them in a top six with everything we just talked about?
Pretty much any team could be in the top six. Such a politician, huh?
I could see it. Thank you. I could see it. Well, it's been fun. Here's a game plan for the offseason too. Like Morgan said, we're not going to force content. I'm not a big believer in, we're both not about like, hey, let's do a podcast every other day or every, like, you want the quality to be up there and
correct.
You don't want to force it, but we will make sure we try to get some awesome conversations with people who maybe play in the NBA. We're working on some things, or people who cover the league. We met some people at Summer League that we'll be trying to have on too. We're going to have some cool conversations. And if there's anything big that breaks, we'll have it covered. We're going to do film breakdowns.
And just know, no matter what, for our members, Patreon members, we do a live podcast once a month. Yep. So if you are missing those lives, make sure to become a member today.
Also, you can always email us deuceandmo@gmail.com with your questions, comments, whatever. Also, drop comments below. Let us know how you're feeling about the offseason in the league. We love you guys, but we got to go.
You all have a wonderful rest of your day. See ya.
Deuce and Mo, Deuce and Mo, Deuce and Mo, they tell you what they know. Deuce and Mo, Deuce and Mo, Deuce and Mo, the podcast that you know. Deuce and Mo.
If your day sounds like,
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.